This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Tell your smart speaker to play 93.7 WEEI.
This is Jones and Keefe
on WEEI.
Have you ever seen European fans at the NFL game singing the song?
Yes.
They think it's like the American anthem.
I know.
Like the national anthem
I
for
do
football
like
games.
When the West Virginia Mountaineers, though, actually sing this at their
of
games,
course.
That's awesome.
It kind of gives me goosebumps when the Europeans sing it. I don't know why. It's just, it seems sweet to me.
Because it's one of the rare occasions that it feels like they love America.
Yeah. One of the cool things I've done in my life, sick brag, bro, is I was at a bar in Nashville and I got the band to sing this, and there was like 100 people at a bar and they all knew all the words.
Oh, it's a karaoke killer.
It was
sick brag, bro.
I went to a bar one time, sick brag. But yeah, it was that song. I think people in Europe do think it's like the second national anthem.
It kind of is in some regards. Like, I love that song. Don't get me wrong.
I like it.
Country Roads, it's a great one. Yeah. Love hearing it at football games. But now when I hear it, I always think about watching a bunch of Germans singing it. You know. And
it's well, like, I mean, it does sound even better.
Do they
after
even
like
know what
beers.
West Virginia is?
So, I don't
you know?
Know?
I don't know.
Sounds better after five beers.
Five beers. Speaking of beers, we have another call about the Bills paying people $20 a pop or allegedly maybe a game ticket to dig out their stadium. Nick in Rhode Island, you want to talk about Highmark Stadium and their businesses there?
Yeah, I don't mean to be the dead horse. This is Nick from Rhode Island. You guys are doing great. I love you guys' show. I love you guys filling in. But I just figured I'd put a bow on it. The food and drink and the $20 an hour, I read that's all that stuff. I don't know if you guys saw, and I don't know if this is them taking snow before the shovelers show up or if they're picking dirt out of the snow they shovel. But one of the major American beer companies, because I don't know who your sponsors are, they're actually making a beer out of the snow they shovel out of the stadium.
I'm going to look that up right now.
Thank you, Nick. Yeah, look that up and see if that's a sponsor, and then I'll air my opinions about it. I love the extremely responsible call from Nick saying, I'm not going to name the national beer company
so
that it is.
So it's Bud Light, and it's called a Blizzard Brew, made with snow from Highmark Stadium.
Yeah. I mean, obviously because of the food and beverage regulation, they have to know that that's safe for consumption, right?
I would hope so.
Okay.
Would
you drink a beer that was made from snow that fell in Gillette?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because I figure if they went through the whole brewing process, it's got to be clean.
We really trust the government, huh?
Yeah. Well, no, more so you just trust, you know, the beer companies.
Well, they're regulated.
Yeah, that's true. But the cans look actually kind of cool. It's like a Bud Light can. It says like farewell season and has the stadium on it. It's actually kind of cool.
So they're only doing it this year because they're getting rid of the stadium?
It looks that way. It's got like the dates on, I think it's like the 2025 I see on the can for like last season. So yeah, I think it's just for this year.
I still have the special goat beer from Sam Adams.
I never got that.
Brady goat beer.
No,
I don't know what
Fitzy's
to do with it. It's been sitting around forever.
You know what I have? And I don't know if this is gross or not gross, but in 2004, Red Sox won the World Series, Coca-Cola came out with special edition Coke bottles in like the six pack. They're like the glass bottles, and there's like a card, you know, the cardboard packaging that has the team celebration. So I bought a pack of them in like early 2005 or whenever they came out. They're still at my parents' house, and they've never been opened. So, like, 21-year-old Coca-Cola is still in those bottles.
It's perfect.
Sick brag,
bro.
Never...
It's probably still good.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, you're never going to open it. It's a collector's item, right?
No, literally. But it's like, should I open it and clean them out? Because is that now, like, it's like 21-year-old Coca-Cola. Is that gross?
No. Yeah. I don't think so. I think you keep it as is. As far as I know, with any collectibles, you, like, keep them just sealed. Seems to be a big important thing. And you don't do anything. You don't touch it. You just try to keep it in pristine condition out of direct sunlight. I think that's one of the things.
Okay.
Whether it's a card or Coca-Cola, I'm not sure. We heard from Drake May the other day. Of course, there was all the off-field news developing, and he responded to that a little bit. One of the things that he also had to respond to was the ongoing questions about the strength of schedule and whether that's changing the way that people look at them, look at this highly successful season, and look at his chances for MVP. I want to first play what Drake May said and then a very interesting local rebuttal that it got.
Yeah, we play the National Football League. You know, every team's got great players that get paid a lot of money. It's not like we're playing Foxborough High School down the road. You know, we play well on our schedule, and we can't control that. And just trying to go out there and win. A lot of these teams that we do play are good, and they're in the National Football League for a reason.
All right, we're at Jack Martinelli Field down here in Foxborough, where Foxborough High School football team plays. This goes out to Drake May. We heard you loud and clear in your comment about the football team. So our challenge is this. We have an opening week one next year, and all the coaches and I have agreed that we'd be willing to play the Patriots right here in Foxborough at Jack Martinelli Field.
The wind interference on that cell phone video is, as our friend Greg would say, chef's kiss.
Yeah.
Perfectly executed. Yeah, Sully, make sure you just get the whole field in the shot.
Hey, I feel bad. Like, Coach Jack Martinelli, by the way, was the head coach at Foxborough High School for like 30 years, and he spent a chunk of that time hearing Bill Belichick in team meetings say, I could get the kid from Foxborough High to do
Johnny
better
Foxborough.
Than that. Johnny effing Foxborough, if you ask Giselle, right? And then now, I think he's retired now. It's the next head coach. And now this guy got to hear Drake May saying, well, we're not playing Foxborough High. I feel kind of, didn't they win the Super Bowl within the last few years? I kind of feel bad for those guys at Foxborough High.
I think that it's fantastic for them. It puts them on the national map. Like, yeah, everybody knows Foxborough for the Patriots.
They're going to start recruiting kids away from CM.
Yeah, you keep hearing about Foxborough High. That puts you on the map. All marketing is good, right? All news, all PR, all press is good press.
What they should do now is
play it again, Jackson. Yeah. Just really quick.
I think Drake May and some of those guys, when they do their summer workouts together, they got to do one at Foxborough High Field. I think that's going to be the next logical step here. You know, when they do their get together, QB receiver, hangout things, they got to do one at Foxborough High. I think that's the logical next step to this.
Okay, so before the break, I was saying that, of course, Drake May there is talking about the soft schedule that we've heard endlessly and that admittedly I've talked about a lot because it is a reality that's part of the Patriots' success. I would say it's like if we're doing what's the opposite of blame pie? It would be like gratitude pie. I don't know, responsibility pie.
Gratitude pie.
I would say it's,
what'd you have for Thanksgiving? Gratitude pie.
I would say it's 50% Drake May, 35% Mike Vrabel. I'm doing this off the top of my head. And then the rest of it is the schedule. Like, the schedule plays a significant portion, I think, of why you're successful this year. It's not the main reason or the only reason, but it's a big part of it. But then yesterday I was sitting around and I see a couple things come across the old social media machines. And I think this is something that I haven't heard enough about the team that's probably going to get the one seed overall, the team that's probably, because the Chargers are sitting Justin Herbert, going to get the first round bye in the playoffs. The Broncos, I see this on Twitter from Ari Marav. I'm sorry if I butchered that name. Broncos have won 11 one-score games this season, tying the NFL for the most in a season, previously set by last year's Chiefs and the 2022 Vikings. And so I thought, well, that's interesting. One-score games, you know, could be easy to say, like, just as easily, maybe you miss a field goal or there's a different call towards the end. We've been on the other side of this with teams that we support oftentimes. Brian Knowles tweets this. In a universe not too far from our own, here are the current NFL standings if every single one-score game had the opposite result. Do you want to hear what they would be in the AFC?
Yes.
One, Chiefs.
Okay.
Two, Colts.
Okay.
Three, Ravens.
Yep.
Four, Bills.
Yep.
Five, Texans. Six, Patriots. So you're still a playoff team. Seven, Jags. Eight, Browns. Nine, Bengals. 10, Chargers. Have you heard who we haven't seen yet?
Yeah.
11 Steelers, 12 Raiders, 13 Dolphins, 14 Titans, 15 Jets, 16 Broncos. If the Broncos lost all of those 11 one-score games, they would be dead last in the AFC. That is crazy to me. They need to be put on fraud watch yet again. This is the second time this week we put the Broncos on fraud watch. We put them on fraud watch about the level of quarterbacks that they've seen as a defense, and oh, the defense so great. And they are like middle of the road in their passing defense against those quarterbacks. And then you see this, those one-score games go the other way. One thing goes different in those games, and they're dead last in the AFC.
It's a very similar thing to the Minnesota Vikings last year, right? Went 14-3, they won, I think, 9 one-score games, maybe 10, and they get to the playoffs. Sam Darnold gets hit in the mouth, doesn't play well. They get eliminated early. And then this year, Darnold leaves, and he's done good in Seattle.
Ding!
But they start losing some of those one-score games. And next thing you know, they're out of the playoffs. Like, it's very – and even that team, with Brian Flores and that defense, they were elite on that side of the ball, and it still wasn't enough to save them in the playoffs. And, Mego, you look at some of these one-score – like, it's week one, but, like, they beat the Titans by one score. They beat the Raiders 10-7.
I mean, you lost to the Raiders, so that maybe don't
but
use
no, but
that
later
head-to-head
in the season,
comparison.
Like, not week one. Like, later in the season, 10-7, they barely beat the Raiders. They beat the Jets 13-11. Like, so some of these one-score games are games that, like, even Kansas City on Christmas, like, Kansas City's third stringers, and it's a 2013
game. I think
game.
That's the one that made a lot of people sit up and go,
Washington,
what's happening with
27-26 overtime win? Like, yeah.
This is where my fraud antennas go up.
I'm saying this makes me look at the Broncos pretty differently. Now, I know that they had played a lot of these to the ones that you just called out there, mostly low-scoring games, and their one-score wins. But it does make me think, okay, so they're probably going to get the first round in the bye in the playoffs.
I'd be surprised if they don't.
It would be total shock if they don't at this point. Even I don't want, if I'm a Patriots fan, to have to go out to Denver and play there. It's not been a comfortable place even for the Brady teams to play in the AFC Championship. It sucks. It's the one stadium in the league that I think still maintains home field advantage because of the mile high, the altitude stuff that's unpredictable. You're an untested team in terms of all your pieces, the core pieces playing together in playoffs before. These are untested waters. But I don't think that Broncos defense, and I don't think that Broncos team is as good as most first-round playoff teams are, or first-round bye-earning playoff teams, top-seeded teams are. I don't think that they are reflective as good as that number one team.
Yeah, I would agree. And, like, you even look at some of the teams, like, and we don't have to go back all the way through, but, like, last year, the Chiefs were the one seed. You're like, okay, maybe they're not as good as they used to be, but it's still Mahomes. It's still Reed. Like, they're great. Like, the year before, I think the Ravens were the one seed. You're like, okay, they're good. And this year, it's like, okay, the Broncos are a really good team. But as we've talked about the AFC kind of all year, I don't know if there's a team in the AFC that I look at and like, wow, top to bottom, that's an elite team. Like, every team in the AFC has at least one significant question mark. Like, even the Broncos. We talk about the Patriots, about not being experienced and this and that. Like, Sean Payton's won a Super Bowl. A lot of other guys on that Broncos team have not gone deep in the playoffs, right? Including their starting quarterback, who hasn't been deep in the playoffs before either. And you wonder how good is Bo Nix going to be in a playoff game. So, like, every single team, we can go through every team in the AFC, and there's at least one or two things that we're like, oh, wow, that could cause them to lose in the wild card round, or they could make the Super Bowl. But every team, and I think for the Broncos, yes, the defense is great, but I think there are some questions there about, yeah, some of the close games they've won against bad teams, but also whether you like Bo Nix or not, any question you have about Drake Bay in the playoffs, same question stand about Bo Nix.
Well, I would say even more.
Yeah.
Look, Bo Nix has been in the playoffs, but he's not playing at the level with the schedule in front of him, given all those caveats that Drake May is. I just look at I look at all the different caveats that you can put around teams this year. And I know people are pissed off about hearing about the strength of schedule, especially when it relates now to the new way that we're talking about it, whether Drake May can get the MVP, whether he's likely to be voted in as the MVP, and that the strength of schedule once again is working against the Patriots in that narrative. And these narratives are like, who cares about the narrative when you have the stupid record that you have and the record that you had last year and the record that you had before that? Like, I get all of that. It's just a way of demonstrating all these teams are flawed. I would say more flawed than previous years, to your point.
I would agree.
All these teams have huge weaknesses, and you can look over the body of work that they've put out there this year and said, well, are they really that good? And in this case, I'd say the Broncos are really not that good as a one seed. Look at previous one seeds. I just don't think that they're as good as a lot of the one seeds you've seen in the past.
Yeah, and so many of these teams, like everything we just said about the Broncos and you can say about the Jaguars. Like, what, they haven't gone deep in the playoffs before. They have a first-year head coach in Liam Coe, who's doing a terrific job, but still, first time in the playoffs this year. Like, the Chargers, Justin Herbert doesn't have a playoff win. And he's, like, you, again, even Houston, who I think that defense might be the best individual unit in the entire AFC, but what happens if a team gets up 14-0 on them? Can they come back? Can they hang with a team like that? Pittsburgh, I don't even think, is that good. So you can go through any one of these teams, unlike some other years. And so it's weird because the field is a little more balanced in that, yes, you can go through every team and there's going to be a significant flaw or two. But I also think the flip side of that is the Patriots are going to play a team wild card weekend that is better than your typical 7 seed.
Oh, definitely.
And that's the issue. Like, in the past, a team like the Bills, let's just say they finished 12-5, wouldn't be the 6 seed, or the Chargers at 11-6 might not be the 7 seed. They'd be higher up, but the top teams would be better too.
617-779-7937 if you want to share who you're afraid of in the AFC playoff picture. Maybe it's the Ravens with Lamar Jackson coming back to play this week. Maybe it's just the Chargers or the Bills, who are both resting their starting quarterbacks in anticipation of possibly playing you in the wild card weekend. We are all ears here. Megan Ottolini and John Lyons with you until 2 p.m. We're going to continue our Patriots talk on the other side. Our buddy Tommy Curran, he made a statement that I think, because it's a holiday week, I haven't seen get a ton of attention. I think if our typical hosts were on the station this week, it would get a lot more attention. And so I feel the need to bring it up here. We're going to hit that right after trending.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This is Jones and Keefe
on WEEI and streaming everywhere on the Odyssey app.
John, there's a point where over the last couple years, as we head into the offseason, and the Patriots would largely be out of the playoffs, the conversation would turn to what coaches are going to be promoted to head coaches and what coaches are going to be snatched up out of college football, out of other teams around the league as offense coordinators or other types of assistant coaches. And the trend had been for quite a while that it was going to be offensive coordinators, play callers, young guys who were maybe a little nerdy, a little analytical, who had a system that they ran, yep, a system they believed in. And they often came off the branches of other offensively minded coaches coaching trees. And the Patriots are one of a couple teams, along with the Texans, along with my Commanders, who over the last years really zagged on that. They decided to
Jets
maybe to less
successful degree, yeah,
but decided to go with, you know, the defensive culture builder, program builder type of guy. Not saying those other kinds of coaches can't be culture builders and program builders. Chris Scheim, if you're listening, please don't get all hot and bothered under the collar. Like, they can, but there were these different kind of archetypes. Sean McVay is really one of the guys who I think started this idea of the offensive darling of the league, and he's the super young coach who takes over the Rams. switches up the quarterbacks after a couple of years, brings them to the Super Bowl twice, wins the second Super Bowl after getting pantsed a little bit by Bill Belichick. Highly regarded as probably a top three, if not top two, coach around the league. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and then I think you would sprinkle on a guy from that tree, Kyle Shanahan, right?
Yes.
Came into the 49ers.
Has not had the success yet.
But he hasn't won a Super Bowl, but he's been to a couple. I mean, lost one of them in overtime. The other one, Jimmy Garoppolo, overthrew a guy on fourth down. But point being, he didn't win one, but he's been to two. They're in the NFC Championship game, it feels like, every other year. So, yeah, it was really those guys. And you're right, started with McVay, then Shanahan, that kind of grew that persona into something a lot of teams wanted.
So I paint the picture there because I was listening to Tommy Curran's Patriots Talk podcast presented by NBC Sports Boston the other day, and he and Phil Perry were talking about offenses. And this was in context of whether Drake May should win the MVP, whether Mike Vrabel should win Coach of the Year. So an overarching conversation. And then our buddy Tommy Curran sneaks in this opinion, and I went, wow, I haven't heard. I sat up like I'm sitting up in my chair right now, and I went, wow, I haven't heard anyone take it that far. This idea that's kind of creeping around with some media types, I haven't heard anyone take it this far until I heard Tom E. Curran.
The offensive coaching for the Patriots is better than the Rams. I think Josh McDaniels is a better offensive coach than Sean McVay. If you have a pipe, I suggest that you take your right hand, hold the pipe with your left hand. You take that and you put it inside the pipe and you tamp it down. Okay? You will have then put it in your pipe and you will now smoke it. Put it in your pipe and smoke it. McDaniel's better offensive coach than Sean McVay.
Sure.
And Phil Perry, you hear there at the end? Yeah. Sure. He wasn't going to argue with him. What do you think of that? Do you agree?
It's not a crazy
thing. I'm not
saying
it's crazy. I haven't heard anyone say that. I haven't heard a single person say that.
I'd put him third behind McVay and Shanahan overall, just as a pure
scheme. Josh McDaniels.
Yeah.
So it goes McVay, Shanahan, offensive geniuses, Josh McDaniels, offensive coordinator.
Yeah. This is McDaniels' 15th year running the Patriots offense. And I include 2005 when he had the title of QB's coach, but he was calling the plays. 15th year. They're on pace to finish top 10 in scoring. So out of those 15 years, Mego, this would be the 14th time they've been top 10 in scoring with him. That includes a year with Matt Cassel. That includes a year with Mac Jones. And now it includes a year with Drake May as well, first year working together. And it also includes a year in 2016 when the first four games were Jimmy Garoppolo and Jacoby Brissett before, obviously, Brady came back. So I'm not – I love the hire when they hired him, whenever it was, in January, February. I love the hire then. I anticipated that it was going to work out great. It has. And look, the biggest reason the Patriots are good this year is Drake May took a jump forward. A huge part of that is his work with McDaniels. Not the only part, right? May deserves the most credit for the work he's put in. But a big part of that is the work they've put in together and how good things have been.
I don't disagree. You're not answering the question.
Well, I said he's third.
So you don't think he's greater than Sean McVay as an offensive coach? I'm not talking his experience as a head coach both times. We all know that was not a success for Josh McDaniels. Yeah. Otherwise, he'd still be a head coach. I'm talking about a play caller, a quarterback developer, and how he sees the offense. Who is better, Josh McDaniels or Sean McVay?
I'd give McVay a slight edge. Yeah.
I would too.
Because he got to a Super Bowl with Jared Goff. And I don't think Jared Goff's that good. I think he's good, but he's not as good as people think. I'd give him a slight edge. And another part of this, and I think this is where McDaniels has an edge over Shanahan in one category, is part of being an offensive coordinator is clock management. And McDaniels is much better at that. Like, you look at the end of half, end of game situations, not just this year, years past.
You think
past.
That's McDaniels, though? Because I think that's
I think
Stretch.
He's a big part. I think Stretch is part
John
of it.
I think that's John Stryker doing
I think
that.
It's, I think Stretch is part of it, and I think back in the day, Casario was part of it as well when he was here. But I think Josh was a big part of that, too, like, because they're all working in concert. So I give him the edge. I also look at, too, like, Kyle Shanahan, don't forget, Matt Ryan won an MVP working with him in Atlanta. And I know we all remember 28-3 and Shanahan's bad play calls at the end to throw the ball. I get that. You look at the totality of that season, like, Ryan did win the MVP. Same reason I thought Dan Quinn would be successful in Washington. People laugh at him for 28-3, but, like, you were still in the Super Bowl, dude. Like, you know, so I would put McDaniels right now at three overall as an offensive mind and all that. And I just think some of the stuff that, like, we talk about the Patriots and their lack of weapons, like, Shanahan went 5-3 with Mac Jones, switching quarterbacks midseason. That's a really impressive thing to do. So, yeah, I just think it's not a crazy, like when Curran says that, I'm not like, oh wow, that's crazy. Like, I think McDaniels is third, but I get the point.
I love it. I think it's a great, strong opinion. And I think Tommy Curran and Phil Perry are both extremely smart and know more about Josh McDaniels than I do. I don't totally agree with it. I do think Sean McVay, it has, to your point, I would agree with your assessment. He has a slight edge on Josh McDaniels.
One thing, I'm sorry to cut you off. So I talked about McVay getting to a Super Bowl with Goff. If McDaniels gets to a Super Bowl with May, does that then change the calculus? And like, okay. Because McDaniels has six Super Bowl rings. If he gets to another one with May, like maybe that.
He's having an MVP caliber season. And again, this is like, it's a little bit the snake eating its tail, because part of the reason the offense is so good is that Drake May is so good. But you're wondering, is Drake May so good because Josh McDaniels is coaching him so well, / Josh McDaniels' team with Ashton Grant and everybody else? Like, is Mike Vrabel a bigger part of that? Like, you can ask all of those questions. I think it just keeps putting you in a feedback loop. But here's my feeling with Josh McDaniels. So we've seen him in New England, right? Aside from Tom Brady, we've seen him with Matt Castle.
Yep. Top 10 scoring offense.
Okay. We've seen him with Mac Jones.
Top 10 scoring offense.
Who am I forgetting in there in between? Cam Newton.
Yep, that one. That's the one. So I said 14 out of 15 years. That's the one year that they were not top 10 in scoring, was the Cam Newton year.
Okay. So and then now we've seen him with Drake May. And I know there's been backup quarterbacks that Jimmy Garoppolo, that Jacoby Brissett, that you've thrown in there at different points to start games, but primarily as your starting quarterback for the season. I don't think that if he takes Drake May to the Super Bowl, I think that more just says more about Drake May is the kind of quarterback that will get you in multiple Super Bowl appearances, rather than Josh McDaniels is the kind of offensive minded coach that, like Kyle Shanahan, who can take Jimmy Garoppolo to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I don't know that Josh McDaniels can do that. And that's where I look at Sean McVay, and he has the Goff appearance. Now, they didn't win that Super Bowl. He needed Matthew Stafford to win the Super Bowl.
Super Bowl, by the way.
Okay, but you could also say he was overwhelmed by the moment and Bill was on the other side.
Right, but Josh did a better job in that Super Bowl, especially in key spots late in the game than McVay.
I think it's interesting that Josh has become such a divisive figure locally.
You know why? Like, the reason is,
because he's great when he has great quarterbacks, and otherwise he's kind of like, he's probably an above average play caller.
I don't agree with that, considering they had top 10 offense with Matt Castle and Mac Jones, who now we look back on and weren't that good. And the other piece, though, and I think it's a psychological thing. So the Brady Belichick years, they were good every year, obviously, but people didn't want to criticize Brady. They didn't want to criticize Belichick. So if the offense went bad, whether it was a week, couple weeks, whatever, they would point to McDaniels, right? Because they didn't want to criticize Brady because he's God.
Right.
They didn't want to criticize Belichick, also God. And I love those guys too. But then, so where do you point the finger? You point it at the players around Brady. You point at the coaches around Belichick. And I think McDaniels, because of that, became a lightning rod. And then you add in that he was a bad head coach. So you put that together and people are like, oh, it wasn't him, blah, 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 this and that. Like, that to me, it was a psychological thing. Because if you just watch them play and their offense is better than everyone else year after year after year, like, at some point you got to say, hey, this guy's good. Like, even if you say, oh, it's more Brady, it's more, like, this guy's good. But I think
but
that
it's
was
not
part.
Just like, oh, it's more Brady. It's the greatest quarterback in the history of the game. And then you have
Head coach.
Drake May, who's in his second year, has made one of the greatest leaps as a second-year quarterback, schedule and everything considered, and is in a two-horse race for MVP by most accounts. So that's where I look at McDaniels and I go, I think he deserves it. And again, I think he's contributed to that. But am I sitting here saying he's if you could, okay, put it this way. If these guys all are free agents, and you can have Sean McVay as the guy working next year, or let's say 2 years from now, because you want the carryover from year to year. Okay, I'll give you that. So 2 years from now with Drake May, and you're going to get ready to pay Drake May a ton of money, would you want Sean McVay guiding him? Would you want Kyle Shanahan guiding him? You see what he did with Brock Purdy? Or would you want to keep Josh McDaniels there? Like, which one of those guys, who actually is going to overall benefit your offense more?
I think if it's 2 years from now, I'd actually lean towards keeping McDaniels, because that's mean they would have been successful together for two more years.
Well, you don't know. The second year, I'd say maybe wouldn't be a success. Yeah,
and I think, too, if Gerard Mayo and Alex Van Pelt had stayed, would May have taken a jump? Yes. Would it be this level of an MVP jump? I don't think so. And I think Vrabel deserves credit for that, too. But I think that's enough. Like, yeah, I think he would have no doubt taken a jump forward. But I think he would have gone from a young, promising rookie to maybe, like, the 12th or 13th best quarterback in the league instead of maybe the best right now, at least for this year, or the second best if Stafford wins the MVP. So I think that's part of it as well. Like, he takes a jump with Van Pelt this year and Mayo, but not as big. Like, the Patriots this year, if Mayo and Van Pelt were here, probably would win 8 or 9 games because the free agents they brought in, the draft, and their schedule. But they don't have 13 wins going into the last week or anywhere close to it with those guys.
So I know we've played this sound somewhere on the station before, but Colin Cowherd had Mike Vrabel on earlier this week, and when he was kind of talking about the MVP situation around Drake May, whether or not he can actually win it over Matthew Stafford, he hearkened back to having Tom Brady on his own show, The Herd, earlier this year. And here was Brady's description of what he thinks is going on between Drake May and Josh McDaniels.
With Drake, he has the physical ability, he has the size. But I think in terms of physical skill set, his downfield passing ability is awesome. So, you know, Josh McDaniels has done incredible job this year for the Patriots. Drake is running the same system that I was in. I know how good that system is for quarterbacks, how Josh does teach these young quarterbacks all the different reasons why he's doing what he's doing, why we're trying to beat this coverage, or how we're going to protect to give you the best chance to be successful.
So he's crediting a lot of what's going on with Drake with Josh McDaniels. Like, hey,
he
can chuck that ball downfield. Like, nobody's taking that away from him. I do think that there is something difficult about watching the way that Drake May plays quarterback and feeling like you can give Josh McDaniels a ton of credit. Because the stuff that Josh McDaniels, I think, has significantly helped Drake with is stuff that doesn't jump off the screen. And so I understand why a fan would watch and say, oh, is Josh McDaniels the one who's chucking it downfield and making that throw? Is Josh McDaniels the one who's improvising and taking off outside the pocket while still protecting himself, unlike last year? But there is this like guiding hand that you have to trust is behind Drake May, that makes him different than the guy he was last year, because the guy he was last year was making all those mistakes, and it can't just be the difference of being in the league for another year.
Yeah, and I think, too, you look at the way this offense has evolved too. Like, coming into the year, and you and I were at training camp, we're like, all right, they're gonna work the middle of the field a lot.
Quick game.
And they've become one of the best deep passing teams in the NFL, and that's a credit to Drake May, but that's a credit to McDaniels for adapting. It's something he's done in the 07. They were a deep passing team. 2017 with Brandon Cooks, they were. Heck, Chris Hogan led the NFL in yards per reception in 2016. So when they've had certain personnel, they've done it. He recognized that they did it this year. And that's coming into the year. What were the biggest things we said about Drake May? Can he hit checkdowns more? And can he turn the ball over less? Not sexy things, but those are going to be the things that were
still looking for some of those checkdowns. I know that's a weird thing to ask for. I'd just like to see that he's got it in his repertoire.
But he's increased that, and his turnover numbers are way down. I mean, last year in, what was it, 11 starts, he had 16 turnovers. Like, it's technically 12 starts, but one of them was that Bills game.
And now he's tied with Matthew Stafford.
And now he's got 8 picks and 2 fumbles. He's got 10 total this year in, 15 games, whatever it is, like 16 games. He's got 10 total. Last year he had 16 in 11 games, essentially.
Yeah. So he's basically cut it in half, at least in interceptions.
And that's been a huge difference for them.
So I maintain Sean McVay, slight edge over Josh McDaniels, but I love that Tommy Kern opened the door to this conversation. I can't wait to have this conversation with him on Sunday and also with Chris Scheim. Because Scheim, I don't think, has heard this sound, and his head's going to explode.
Scheim did finally admit he was wrong about McDaniels, though, like a few weeks ago
on
the morning
show.
I heard it, and I was
very wrong? It was like, I need to give a little bit more credit to. Yeah.
I think he's. I don't know if he actually said the word wrong, but it came off as admitting I was wrong.
Okay. So, yeah. We're going to continue this conversation on the other side.
I give him credit
for that. You can chime in. Do you think that Josh McDaniels is a better offensive coach than Sean McVay? Does this just feed back into the MVP conversation? Is it still a two-horse race between Drake May and Matthew Stafford? What's going to work against Drake May in this conversation? What is going to keep Drake May from winning MVP this year? Right after this.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Now more of Jones and Keefe
on WEEI.
A few texts coming in on the text line, 617-779-7937. We've got, this is the same conversation, this is from 978, this is the same conversation as MVP between May and Stafford. Look at the tools and weapons Sean McVay has on offense compared to McDaniels. Big difference. And Sean also decides what weapons he has on offense, unlike Josh, between draft and free agents. That's from Coach Mahoney. Shout out Coach Mahoney. We were just talking about our friend Tommy Curran's opinion in the last segment, in which he thinks Josh McDaniels is a stronger, better offensive coach than Sean McVay. And it's true. It does line up those parallels, just as the MVP conversation between Drake May and Matthew Stafford do. I think it's a little different, but obviously same teams, same franchises. So overall, it's fair to say that Sean McVay has more control over the situation in which he coaches, but you could also look at it and say, well, Josh McDaniels has less that he's responsible for, so he can just focus more so on play calling, on quarterback development, on development and fit of his offense overall, because he doesn't have to worry about the responsibilities of being a head coach. As we've seen, that hasn't always gone well for him, John.
And we've also seen McVay, some of those guys like Puka Nacua, not a highly touted guy coming out of college. Kyren Williams was, I think, a fifth-round draft pick. So he's taken some of those guys and built them into all pros as well, and they deserve credit for their own work. But I think you can, yes, does McVay have better pieces around him right now? Totally. And has he helped put them in place? Totally. But he's also built some of those guys up to being at the level that they're at. And oh, by the way, I know he calls plays, but it feels like every year he loses his offensive coordinator to go be a head coach somewhere, which, again, not the play caller, but a guy who works close with him in those game plans, in those schemes. So I think you can kind of play that game with both guys, at least in this year individually. You look at their whole careers, there's been years the McDaniels had less to work with. There's been years McVay's had less to work with. I think this year you can kind of play that game with both guys, just in a little bit of a different way.
Turning back to the MVP conversation. So we have week 18 on Sunday. Matthew Stafford played himself out of the Vegas odds makers' favoritism in what's largely a two-man race for the MVP, at least according to what the odds makers out in Vegas think. Is there any chance, though, because I didn't clip the audio for this, but I think it's an interesting perspective. Peter Schrager was on Bill Simmons' podcast and was talking about the possibility that there may be a dark horse in this race. His assertion is Vegas really doesn't know what they're looking at in terms of the race, because this isn't like an algorithm the way that it's decided. It isn't a computer program. It isn't ChatGPT. You don't plug a bunch of stats into the award and say, okay, this guy has better stats. So much of his narrative. And I always think that works in the older quarterback's favor, because he's close to the end. People want to give it as like a career achievement award to somebody like Matthew Stafford. But could there be a dark horse? In this case, Peter Schrager thought, because of the 49ers having a game that really matters against the Seahawks on Sunday, could it be Christian McCaffrey?
And another one, and I know he won't win it, Myles Garrett. Like, if he sets the sack record this weekend, like, that's a... And you just wonder with those guys, like, I don't think they win it, but do they take a vote or two away from a Stafford or a May and kind of affect things that way? And it's funny because it's a whole season award, but it feels like it's really going to come down to these final 2 weeks, because you had Stafford throw the three picks on Monday Night Football, which I think brought May a little bit ahead of him. I thought they were kind of even before that. So this weekend, if Stafford doesn't play well, and May throws three or four touchdowns, then I think May's comfortably ahead. But if May goes out and plays bad against Miami, then maybe Stafford can leapfrog back and be the MVP. So I know it's a whole season award, but because these guys have been so close all year, and your point on the narrative, like Stafford has the lifetime achievement thing. He also has the 40-plus touchdowns thing. But May has the turnaround thing from four wins last year to now how good they are this year. So if he can finish it off with a 14th win on Sunday and play well, then it works in his favor. So I'm not. It doesn't totally come down to this weekend, but I think a lot of it, what happens this weekend, is going to, I think, sway at least some voters.
Having a third, a dark horse candidate in the MVP race actually matters a lot, and this is why. So the way that the MVP voting works, as far as I know, I don't have a vote, but what I have heard is that it is a ranked system of five candidates. So you have to basically weight each candidate. And so you would say, let's say you have Drake May first, you'd say Drake May one, maybe Matthew Stafford second, maybe Christian McCaffrey three, Myles Garrett four, I don't know, let's just say
insert guy five.
Josh Allen five. And so everybody has five choices like that. Now, you get a certain amount of points for being first, second, third, so on. If a bunch of people decide to give Christian McCaffrey the second place behind, say, Matthew Stafford, they go, oh, actually, it's going to be Matthew Stafford, Christian McCaffrey, Matthew Stafford. Those points are all going towards, they're basically taking away from Drake May. So even though Drake May gets a bunch of maybe number one votes from other people, if there's a second candidate and he doesn't come in second on other people's ballots, if it moves away from being a two-man race, that could be the difference. It might not even just be Matthew Stafford versus Drake May. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's the marginal votes in between that could hurt him if he's not just coming in first or second on most ballots.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting point, too, that how do voters, like if you're a voter, and let's say you think Christian McCaffrey is a top three MVP candidate, well, then do you factor in, well, Stafford had to play him twice this year, too. Like, that's just one of those things that the national, because around here, we see Drake May every week at practice multiple times a week. We saw him last year. But if you're a national voter, you saw Drake May Sunday night against the Bills, Thursday night against the Jets, Monday night against the Giants, and then another Sunday night against the Ravens. And he was good in all those games. Patriots won all four of those games, especially the fourth quarter against the Ravens, I think stands out. Stafford, you see him in that bad Monday night game against Atlanta, but you see him playing, then you see him play well in what, the Thursday night game before that. I know they lost against Seattle, but you also have, then is it, well, you've seen him before, like you saw him be good last year, earlier in the year, the year before. And does that, because again, we see May every day. For people that don't, from the national perspective, you wonder if Stafford has more cachet built up with some of those voters.
He certainly does. I'm telling you, I think Drake May should win it.
I agree.
I think Matthew Stafford's going to win it. Now, a lot of it rides on week 18, but that's not the only thing riding on week 18. Yes, the MVP race is maybe front and center of a lot of people's minds when they're watching a Miami Dolphins game that doesn't have a lot at stake for the Dolphins, but there's a lot at stake for the Patriots still and the playoff picture around them. We're going to hit that right after this break.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.